Welcome to Land Academy. This is the Cash Flow from Land Show, where we show you how to buy unwanted vacant land and sell it for more on the internet. I'm Steve Butella.
I'm Jill DeWitt.
We are your hosts. With over 15,000 completed transactions, we are the experts in this niche land flipping business.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com. All right, let's get this show started.
Today's guest, Mike Simmons of juststartrealestate.com, says this from his bio. I started my real estate career investing a few years back, and since then I've done several very profitable real estate flips. Along the way, I've learned a lot and get approached all the time by new real estate investors who have questions about real estate investing. Hey, that's exactly what the show is all about. I've helped a lot of them, but I noticed a real lack of good real estate advice in the industry, except for Land Academy. Most of my experience is in flipping houses, and I have also been a landlord, investing properties to overseas investors, as well as a few other types of real estate investments. I'm here to help you and avoid some of the mistakes that I've made. Mike, welcome to the show.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me. That's really cool.
You know, in our little pre-talk, you let me know that you've got your own podcast, and it's such a relief because we've been interviewing people at a pretty good high-paced rate lately. And I think some of them it's the first time they've ever talked on a telephone before.
Yeah, I know. I get that a lot too. That's why I suggested we went this route, because I knew we had the equipment to make it sound a little bit better than a phone call for sure.
Tell us a little bit about your company before we get into our interview.
Okay, will do. So my company has evolved. I have done what I preach to people for years to do, and that's look at your market, figure out what's working in your market, and adapt your business so that you can be successful. So I started off as a house flipper in 2008, right? Which was like, you know, the apocalypse of real estate time, except for investors, right? I mean, honestly, if you take away all of the hardships that people went through and just look at it purely from an investor standpoint, I wish it would happen again. I mean, I don't want people to be displaced and all that, obviously, but from just a purely investing standpoint, greatest time ever to get involved, right? Yeah. It was hard for me to get involved at the money that houses were being bought and sold at. And then when everything dropped off, it was a lot easier to get in the game. So that's how I started as a flipper. And I did that for about 6 years, pretty steady. And I was pretty successful at it. And then the deals started drying up a little bit because I got all my deals off the MLS, right, through a realtor, and he wasn't bringing me deals anymore. He wasn't able to find them. And I would go to events and local meetups and things and talk to a lot of friends I had made in the industry who were also real estate flippers, and they had the same complaint. Can't find any deals. It's drying up. You know, I used to do 30 deals. Now I'm lucky to do 10. And it was like the same thing no matter who I talked to. They couldn't find deals. I knew I was looking for deals the same way they were looking for deals, and they were looking for deals same way I was. And it just occurred to me how, you know, the definition of insanity, keep doing the same thing over and over, expect different results. So I decided I've got to do something different. I have to take control of this. I'm sick of waiting for a realtor to bring me deals that they find. And I started doing my own marketing, and the deals started coming, and I started flipping them. And then the deals started coming a little bit higher volume, and it started to overwhelm me. So I said, hey, I know a lot of people that want to flip houses just like me. I'm going to give them a call and see if they'll take this one on. And I called them up and, hey, you know, Joe, I got this deal. You know, I knew that I got it in my head. I got it for $90,000. I said, hey, I got this deal for $105,000. You want it? Here's the numbers. And they're like, yeah, that's great. That's awesome. I love it. I'll take it. And $15,000 assignment later, I said, hey, that was pretty easy.
That's
that wasn't too hard.
That's the definition of wholesaling.
Yeah, exactly. And then. I won't go into the long detail, but slowly I started turning over to doing more and more wholesaling until now I'm pretty much all wholesaling completely. No more flipping really anymore. I'm doing all wholesaling because in my market, everyone's dying for deals. Like, they just can't get enough of them. So I literally get something under contract. If I would do it, I know I can find someone who will do it in no time.
Man, we are right on the same page. It is so refreshing to have a podcast with somebody who's in the real estate business. You know?
I think that was a joke at me, a poke at me, but that's
no,
all good.
No, it wasn't at all, Jill. You're in the real estate business, right? We're right alongside each other. We've been speaking with some people who are very successful at other stuff, and and it's, you know, it's nice to talk to somebody. So, what's the secret? How do you keep your pipeline full?
Well, I'll tell you what. I keep the pipeline full. I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I started wholesaling, I didn't really mean to wholesale, and I wasn't really a good marketer at all. So I just started, I just talked to a local wholesaler in my market, a friend of mine, and I said, what do I do? How do I get this going? I want to start marketing and I really don't know where to begin. And he gave me some basics and he said, yeah, throw a couple hundred postcards out there and see if you do more than 200, it's going to get overwhelming for you. So I said, okay, threw a few hundred out. And over the couple of months, I gradually increased a little bit at a time and started doing deals. And it occurred to me that this is a formula, and it's a pretty predictable formula. Yep. The more you market, the more deals you get.
That's it.
So if $800 a month is going to produce one deal, what if I did $5,000 a month? What if I did $10,000 a month? So our marketing started ramping up, and we were basically taking a machine gun approach, right? I'm going to throw out tons of marketing. When it comes back in, I'll use that money to reinvest in my business. And so we did a lot of marketing. To answer your question directly, we keep it full by doing a ton of marketing. Now I've gotten to the point in my business where I'm not happy with the volume that I'm getting just through marketing. It's the same volume I've been getting, but I want to grow. So how do I grow? You've got to come up with other avenues. So that's what we're starting to investigate, smarter marketing, and then additional pipeline, ways to get things in the pipeline other than just straight marketing.
Mm-hmm. What have you come up with?
There's
so
a lot
far?
Of ways. I mean, Bandit Signs. I spoke to someone recently who is extremely successful with Bandit Signs, and kind of got his secrets, his tricks of the trade. And we started that. I started out same way I did with marketing, just a couple hundred Bandit Signs, no big deal. And we're already going to do a couple deals off of that. That's going to pay for my Bandit Signs for the next year. So I started with 200. My next order was for 1,000, and we'll see how that goes. And then the next order will probably be for 3,000 to 5,000. I mean, that's just how I'm a very impatient guy. And when I see something that works, I go, well, if it works at this level, what if I 10 times that, what will happen? Yep. And that's kind of how I approach things.
Yeah, you're the kind of guy who probably pushes it until it explodes, right? Like me.
Yeah, pretty much. I push it till it explodes, and then I throttle back and go, wow, that was pretty fun. Let's see what I did wrong here and try to fix it. Right. So that's kind of where I am with my marketing. We're pushing out about 15,000 mail pieces a month, and it's great, but there's a little bit of diminishing returns. So we're going to start maybe throttling back just a little and use some of that extra money into other avenues and see if we can, figure out another stream of deals coming in.
You know what I did a couple years ago from a marketing perspective, exactly what you're talking about here, that paid off in spades, and you have to do it in the right neighborhood. There's a lot of handymen and guys with pickup trucks, and they all would love to have those side rails on the side of their trucks. If you can kind of picture those wooden rails.
Yeah.
So I put an ad in Craigslist and I said, I'll pay for your side rails, but you got to put them up with my phone number on it and my message. And man, I got overwhelmed. So it costs like $300 or $400 to get those rails. Yeah. Feel free to use it through, and again, it's not going to work in a super high end market. But we got tons and tons and tons of calls from that, and still get calls actually.
No kidding. Did the handyman themselves get bombarded with people walking up to him trying to find out? Okay.
But he's like, I mean, he got business from it too, because the guys that are walking up saying all that stuff, it was great. It works out great for
that's
everybody.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great idea. And that is truly unique. I've never heard that one before.
Good. Well, hopefully try something like that and let us know. I'd love to see, Jill and I are in the land business exclusively now, because I don't have the patience for housing, but
the stomach for it.
We do it in a different version of the exact same thing. We just kill it with mailers. And And the other thing too, that I've with houses is I kept our mailing list to people who only have, who don't have a mortgage associated with their property. And my percentages went through the roof, our success percentages, because they can wheel and deal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I learned a little bit from a guy named Tom Kroll. I don't know if you know him, down in Florida. He's a wholesaler, but he told me, and I still use it to this day, and I swear by it. He markets to equity regardless. Now, this is housing, right? We're not talking about land, so we're back in the housing. He markets to equity and age, right? They have to have a certain amount of equity or free and clear, and age. You rarely, or in my experience, I rarely buy houses from anyone under the age of 45.
Excellent.
Because typically they don't have the equity, right? So I mail to equity and age, and man, it's going phenomenally well.
You know, that's without actually phrasing it that way, Jill, I think that's exactly what we do. Or the vast majority of the calls that we get are the properties that we purchase are from people who are over the age of they're not going to use the property anymore, and they're just ready to kind of check it off their list. So it gives us a lot of negotiation power.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
Great, man. So I'm going to run through a couple of interview questions.
Let's do it.
What was the first deal you did, and how much out of pocket cash did it take?
First deal that my wife and I did was in 08, bought a little property here in Michigan. We spent $40,000. We financed it through a traditional mortgage, right? A mortgage company. And we took our own personal money and did the rehab. Now, our personal money meant money that we had in the bank, which wasn't nearly enough to do the rehab, credit cards, lines of credit. Like, we just sort of we just pushed all our chips in the middle of the table pretty much. And if that didn't work, it was going to be a real miserable, you know, marriage for a lot of years. So, and it was me, I was the one driving this. My wife is very conservative, and she was definitely on board, all in, excited, but she had trouble sleeping at first because it was so scary for her. And so we did this, we pushed our own money in. We spent $15,000 on the renovations. We spent $40,000 on the house. And at the end of the day, we ended up selling for around 80 and had a net profit after everything was said and done of about $15,000. And you would have thought it was like 15 million. Like, we were just, we were freaking out. She was like, you know, she went from saying, I don't know about this, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, to when is the next one?
Yeah.
Find the next one. Let's do this.
So you got the right wife. Just, then.
Yeah, she's awesome. I mean, like I said, super conservative. And I can tell you this, had we lost our money, it would have went completely the other way.
Oh,
it would have been,
oh,
no, you're not. So it was good that it went well, obviously. And we had a lot of luck and, you know, a lot of hard work. And we really haven't had too many hurdles or challenges. And we kind of, you know, I'm a really aggressive, risk-taking kind of guy. So she's a good compliment to me because sometimes I get ahead of myself and she'll go, now, wait a minute, think about this for a second. And when I do, usually she's right. And I go, okay, you're right. I'll calm down. But after we did that first one, or during that first one, actually, we had a mentor, a local guy here in our market who was very successful and kind of would give us, informally, give us some advice. And he's like, you need to talk to everybody you find, everybody you run into, tell them what you're doing, really, you know, really broadcast what you guys are up to in this first flip, even before you're done, like talk about it, get online, Facebook, everything. And we did that. And just from all of that talking and just meeting people and telling them what we're up to, we had people approach us before we finished that first deal and said, hey, we really like you guys. We like what you're doing. You seem like great, nice, honest people. We want to get involved. We've got some money. We'd like to invest in your next deal. And from there, we've never spent a dime of our own money.
Oh, my gosh. What a story.
Yeah, that's it worked out well. And we actually, this is sort of like, you know, don't feel too bad for me, but we got to a point where the money that we had available to us was growing faster than the deals that we were finding. Even in the good time where you could find deals all over the place, we had so many people, the word of mouth and things, and just us being very vocal, that we had people approaching us. We had to say, we would love to work with you. We just right now, we don't have the deals, you know, available to use your money. It's a great problem to have, but we sort of worked so hard at raising money that it became bigger than our ability to find deals.
Here's the message that we send at Land Academy day in and day out. If you are sourcing and locating undervalued real estate, you're going to win. There's tons and tons of money. The money will find you. If you're buying an asset that's worth $125,000 for $90,000, you're going to win.
Yep.
So spend the time on the marketing piece. We don't call it marketing. We are huge direct mail fans here, and we actually send out offers. We don't horse around. We say we're going to buy your property for X and that's it. And it is amazing. Yeah. And with a signature block at the bottom, and it is amazing the number that we get back where they just sign it. Because we don't blindly send out. We do a lot of homework before it gets into our database to even send it out as an acquisition candidate. So
that's a great idea.
Sounds like we have a lot in common. You know, I'm from Michigan too.
Oh, are you really? What part? This is going to bore everyone, but I'm curious.
I grew up at 13 in Shaner, but ultimately graduated from high school in Grosse Pointe.
No kidding. I live – here we go. Everyone can – nobody's going to come visit me. Nobody cares. I'm at 17 and John R. basically right now in Troy. So, and I lived in Sterling Heights for a long time, so very close.
Yeah, that's – you know the Calcaterra Funeral Home on 8 Mile? I mean 18 Mile?
Yes, I do.
That's – he was my high school locker partner and college roommate all the way through.
No kidding.
The guy that owns it, yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Small world, right?
Jill, you can take the mute button off now.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Exactly. Thanks. I'm back.
We're back to something anyone cares about except us.
Well, you know, it's funny. I got to tell you, my dad's from Michigan and I have a lot of relatives. He's from Grand Rapids. And so, and with Steven, I'm hearing the accent in your voice, Mike, and it's very, it's a hug. I really kind of like it. It's good.
We're going to accent each other to the point where you can't understand either one of us by the end of this show.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, I won't understand a word at the end.
All right. So on the flip side, what was the worst deal you ever did and what did you learn?
Worst deal I ever did. And it was part of the turning point where I decided I need to make some changes in my business. And so I'll tell you the worst real estate deal I ever did. And then I'll kind of give you a glimpse into like the worst business decision I ever made. So I'll start with the business decision. Things were going so great in real estate and things were starting to come a little bit easy and I was starting to take it a little bit for granted. So I sort of started thinking that everything I did was just going to work out really easily.
We have a lot in common, man.
I took a little detour from real estate and got into kind of an ancillary business and sort of like slowed down my real estate thing. And that business failed miserably and I lost tens of thousands of dollars and I was crushed. So I came back to real estate and said, I need to get back to what I know and what I'm good at. I'm not good at everything. It was a nice humbling experience for me. Got back into real estate. This was before I stopped going on the MLS for deals. Found a deal. My realtor brought it to me and said, this is a great deal. It's a great house. I said, I don't know the area. I'm not familiar with this area. I'm going to have to trust you. And he said, listen, I live in these neighborhoods. I know the area. And I'd been working with this realtor for years, by the way. So he knew me and I knew him. I trusted him. And he's like, buy it. You know, if you can get it for this, we can sell it for that. It's going to be very easy. He said, I'll even be your private investor on this one. Said, great. Awesome. So we started doing the deal. My job was to get the contractors in there, stay on budget, stay on time. I stayed on budget. I stayed on time. We put it up. Long story short, this thing sat on the market forever. It didn't sell for nearly what it was supposed to. We both lost money. I mean, it was just a disaster. And what I learned from that and what I learned and the reason I brought up the little side, you know, adventure I started other business is because I have made a real commitment now that I won't do anything in my business or I won't even be part of a business that I don't have control of the success and failure. And I didn't have control of the success and failure of the ancillary business. And I really trusted someone to know their numbers and I should have been the one that knew the numbers and I should have been sure of it. So I need more control. Basically, it took a control freak and made him more of a control freak. I really have to have control of the success and failure of anything that I do or I'm not going to get involved.
Yeah. I mean, you described how I described the stock market. Why would I ever do that? I do too. It's like driving, it's like sitting shotgun and someone's driving a car like a maniac and you can't do anything.
Yeah. And you just hand them money and you go, hey, if you can, it would be great if you could bring back my money and maybe a little bit more. And if they don't bring your money or more, you just have to deal with it. Like there's no recourse. There's nothing you can do. So the stock market is to me, it's insane. And just, you know, tell me what your returns are on the stock market. And I guarantee I'm beating it by more than twice.
If you do everything right, I think it's about 11% a year. And our typical.
Yeah, you're a wizard if you're getting 11, I think.
And I think, Jill, our regular return on a given deal is about 300 or 400%. And that's within, you know, and we turn those, I think our average turn, Jill, is, correct me if I'm wrong, probably 14 days, maybe a little bit longer.
That's very good.
So, yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yep. I started looking at the stock market before I did real estate, and I was like, it was like reading insurance manuals. I just hated it. It was boring. I just didn't get it. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you. I've never been in the stock market. I never plan to.
Yeah. I'm never leaving real estate. I made a similar decision around 2009-ish, you know, because things were going so well with real estate. Even during the downturn, we were buying great properties and selling them. But I got into a couple other businesses because I thought I was Superman too. And boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, I was wrong too. The business I got into, literally, I was almost like a private investor kind of. Like, it was all my money and I had zero control of the success or failure, none. But it seemed like such a can't miss. And the guy that I was partnering with was so successful at it that I thought, this is a can't miss. And man, it missed big time. Big time. I'll never do that again.
My head got so big during that period that I bought a yacht. I bought a yacht. I lost $800,000.
Oh, wow. That beats my story by a lot. That's a huge life lesson there.
All right. So on the flip side, what's the best deal you've ever done?
I'm doing so many deals now, and it seems like one is better than the other sometimes. But early on, I think the best deal, honestly, this is a really kind of a, I feel like this is a cop out. The best deal I've ever done was my first one because I learned a lot. I made mistakes that we haven't talked about, and I made money, and it made me believe this is real. And it's not just something that I read success stories online at, 12 o'clock at night of other people. Like, I really felt like I was living the success stories that I was reading about. And if that hadn't gone well, not only would my wife have put her foot down and said, we're not doing this again, I probably would have been crushed and disheartened and maybe not tried it again. Probably not. So I don't know how you beat that. Like, the deal that spawns everything. And it really has been. And I've had some good ones. I can't say, like, in Michigan here, when we flip houses, you can expect an average deal profit to be in the $20,000 to $30,000 range. Pretty average. I've never had one of those $150,000 profit deals. I've hit an awful lot of singles, doubles, and triples. You know, nothing where it was like, holy cow, this is just off the charts. But to me, you know, if you're a baseball player and you get a single every time you get up to bat, you'll be in the Hall of Fame.
That's it.
You know, as soon as you retire. So I think that business and real estate is really the same. If you wait for that home run, you might have a couple years in between deals. But if you're consistently hitting singles and doubles, you're going to be phenomenally successful.
Our whole business model is based on that exact theory. My whole thing is, you know, buy these properties as cheaply as you can, do it consistently, and then mark them up 2 to 3 times. Don't sit around and wait, because you can make a lot more if you leave it on the market for whatever, 6, 8, 12 months. But just keep the whole thing moving forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, my original mentor used to have a saying, money loves speed. And that's kind of how I've lived. You keep going fast and fast and fast. Mm-hmm. Keep it moving and you'll be successful.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I've heard that saying. Well, anyway, to put you on the spot, what, like, from a pure dollar standpoint, what's the most cash you've made on one deal?
Most cash I made on one deal, probably about $45,000, I think.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, nothing huge. It's not California numbers, but listen, in Michigan, that's a good deal.
Right.
Can I ask a question? I'm just saying, I'm sure, Mike, you run into the same thing that we hit all the time. People don't believe us.
Yeah.
Isn't it the funniest thing? I'm sitting here saying, until you did that first deal, you didn't believe this was real. And we walk around all the time and people are like, you guys are blowing smoke. We're like, no, really, this is true. I bought it for this and sold it for this. And they don't believe us.
Yeah. So, the biggest question I get is now, especially now that I'm direct marketing, is, you know, you tell someone, and I don't really go around telling people who don't ask. Like, I'm not the kind of person where I sit down and immediately I'm just talking about numbers of my business. You know, I'm not doing that. But when people ask and I tell them, they go, why would anyone sell their house so inexpensively? Why would they not just put it on the MLS? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reasons for it, but people do it all the time. And when they do it, it's what they need. That's what they need out of the situation. So I didn't believe it. No, I mean, I wanted to believe it and I fantasized about how great it would be, but until I did that first one, I can't say that I 100% believed it. You know, I had to do it for myself, and that was super powerful to me, and especially my wife. Now, she's, you know, obviously super excited that we're doing this, but back then she was tentative, she was nervous, and we used to watch all those doggone flip shows where
that's the problem.
People are like go, you know, everything's going wrong and it's like this disaster. And she was like, we can't watch these anymore because I can't take it. I can't take watching people fail at this or go through all this struggle. I just can't do it. So we had to stop watching those shows until we did our first deal.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's great advice too. Turn the TV off after 10 o'clock.
Turn it off. Oh my God. Well, the best advice really is don't listen to friends and family about real estate if they don't know anything about real estate.
Right.
Because our friends and family, we didn't. Here's a good story for you. When we started doing real estate, we didn't tell our friends and family because we were afraid of the negativity, you know, and they're looking out for you, but they were going to be negative. They were going to say, oh, you're crazy. So we didn't tell them because we just didn't want to have to deal with that. We were already nervous enough. So we did our first deal. It went great. Did our second deal. It went great. Time went on. About a year later, we still hadn't mentioned it to our friends and family. And the Detroit News, Free Press, called me and said, hey, we want to do a story on you and your wife. Would you mind, you know, if we came out and interviewed you? And we're like, no, that's fine. So they met us at one of our houses, did a little interview, took a few pictures. And I thought, that's cute. It'll be page 14 of Real Estate, bottom left corner blurb. Well, the next Sunday, we were front page, full color.
Wow.
Half of the front page was us, and the phone started blowing up. It was right around Thanksgiving. We were at my parents' house after the Sunday after Thanksgiving that weekend, and we get a call, and my mom answers, and I can hear her talk, and she's like, "He did what? What are you talking about?" She got a phone. She goes, "You're in the newspaper." I'm like, well, okay, we have something to tell you. We've been flipping houses. And so we just never got around to sitting them down and saying, hey, this is what we're doing. And they found out because we were in the local newspaper on the front page.
I bet you've never lived that down.
Oh my gosh. Our friends too, like some of them were like legitimately mad. Like, how could you not tell us this?
Yeah.
Like, well, listen, we didn't want to deal with the negativity. And honestly, my parents still, I don't think, completely understand what I do, to be honest with you. You know, they ask me all the time, and I can tell their questions they ask are sweet and they care, but they don't 100% grasp it. So,
you know, if you live in Michigan, I know this from experience, if you don't work for General Motors or Ford, you really don't have a real job.
My dad worked for Ford, and he's so all about, you know, blue collar union. Yeah. That's what you have to do. He's still nervous about what I do, but it's funny.
Yeah, my son Mike will eventually get a real job. I don't know what he's doing with that real estate thing.
Exactly.
I can hear it now.
Exactly. Yeah, and he just doesn't get it, and he's an old school guy, but that's you're right. Michigan is all about the automotive industry and going and working in a factory and, you know, working 12 hours a day. And it's exactly what the mindset is.
The other thing too, Mike, is that you're not suffering enough. If you're enjoying what you do for a living, then that's not, you need to suffer more.
I know. Exactly. Well, you must know my dad. That sounds exactly like what he thinks. If you're not working 7 days, 12 hours, you're not really working.
That's right.
Who's home on the weekends? That person doesn't work.
I came out of the real estate closet in a different way. My friends actually did an intervention. They thought I quit my job and I was a drug dealer because I had a nice sports car and bought a nice house and stuff. And I just didn't have a job. So I had to tell everybody that I'm not a drug dealer and this is what I'm doing. And the second I said that, they all wanted to know how they could do it. You know,
that's so funny. Yeah. I find there's a lot of interesting reactions you get. At least I do. I usually get like, I don't care, like the completely couldn't care less, or they're extremely interested. You know, mm-hmm. Some people you tell them and they're just like, no, okay. And they don't care. And then other people, it's like, they can't, like, they get you in a corner and they're just questioning you about it. So it's funny. It's funny the different mindsets. Some people just don't have an interest. That's fine. Not everyone does.
Somebody asked me what I did for a living a few years ago, and I said, I have a real estate investment company. You know, we flip land. And their response was, oh, I'm sorry. You know, that was one of those guys you're talking about. They just don't.
Yeah, well, things will turn around. Don't worry.
Yeah. So what's the most recent deal you've done?
I am working on 7 deals right now. So I have 7 most recent. Like I said, I'm wholesaling. So right now, 7 under contract. I would say the one that's the one that's going to close, the next one that's going to close, it's a multifamily here in Michigan in Ferndale. Because that's some reference for you.
Yeah.
It's a multifamily in Ferndale, just an older brick 5-unit The person that we bought it from has moved up north, and they have a couple of different investment properties. And this one, they just don't have time for them all, so they're starting to get rid of them. And we've been working on this guy for about a year now. He contacted me through one of my direct mail pieces, and the price he wanted was just not possible. He was just not realistic with his price. We told him what we'd pay, and he said, no, thank you. We kept him. We use CRM, obviously, so we kept him, kept his drip phone call system going, and called him once a month from there on. And it was like, no, thank you, no, thank you, no, thank you. And then one day out of the blue, he called us and said, I'm ready to take your offer. We signed it up, put it out to our buyers list, and people were calling like crazy. It's a really good area. It's a great looking little property, and the price is right. So that one is nice. We're going to make $25,000 on that. And it was just, phone calls that we just kept making and following up, and it was a good deal for us.
Ferndale is like, well, did it ever become the Royal Oak that everybody thought it was going to become?
No, not really. Okay. I mean, there's downtown Ferndale is it is kind of a happening area, and it's a nice area, and it's desirable, but not like Royal Oak. No.
Okay.
No, not yet.
Our producers are going to have to take that out of the thing too. That was just for you and me.
Exactly. Again, no one cares. But no, it is a nice area, but it never. No. Nothing is. Not much can compete with Royal Oak. Even in 08, 09, they didn't see much of a dip in the values of houses.
So I'm like, this is what it sounds like to me. You don't have any problems buying property, and you don't have any problems selling it for more.
Well, here's the thing with me, and I think I've gotten to know you enough just in this phone call to know that we're very similar this way. My problem with buying properties is I can't buy enough. Now, what's enough? I don't know. I've not found out yet because I want more. I'm like this. I feel like this black hole of like deals, and I can't suck enough deals into the black hole to satisfy me. So we're doing about 5 to 7 a month, and I'd like to double that. And as far as selling them, when I put them out to my buyers list and I don't get it sold in a couple of days, that's very frustrating for me. So we're growing that buyers list and trying to find more and more people. So my problem is I don't know how far I need to be before I feel like I don't have any problems, because my problem is I want to grow faster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are good problems.
Yeah, that's a good problem. I can't say I'm having a lot of problems. I think we're doing it better and bigger than anybody else in our market. But my goal isn't to be better than necessarily my next door neighbor at this. My goal is to be as good as I can possibly be, and I haven't found out where that is yet.
My theory is that all problems for what we do for a living, all problems can be solved by buying the property cheaper. So you solve the problem on the acquisition side, not on the sales side. So if sales are a little bit slow, it's because you're not buying them right, or you're asking too much, or all of that.
Totally. Totally.
So I'm a
couldn't agree more.
Big fan of the acquisition solving.
Yeah. I tell my partner all the time, if we put this out there and we don't get it sold within the first few days to a week, we obviously are asking too much.
That's
we
right.
were wrong about what it should be for, worth. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's a great point.
This is what we teach. There's two reasons that property doesn't sell. One, it's priced too much, or two, you're not reaching the right people.
And totally.
And the way with the internet and our systems are set up, we always reach the right people. So it's a matter of price.
Totally. Could not agree more.
All right. So, we all need acquisition deal flow. So it sounds like you, you've got multiple lines of filling that pipeline. I mean, as a percentage, is it direct mail? Is it,
It's direct
signage?
Mail by far.
Okay.
No, direct mail makes up 90% of our marketing.
Yeah.
And honestly, I sort of want that to shift a little bit. I want to direct market smarter and maybe spend less and take some of that money that I'm saving and allocate it to other things. You know what I mean? There is a point of diminishing returns when you just throw money at a problem. So now we have to get smarter and better. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
No, have you considered going into other markets, like in different states?
Yeah, and that's definitely in the horizon. I really haven't done. I haven't made a big enough splash in my market yet. There's a lot more that I could be doing, and there's a lot of deals that I'm sure that I'm not getting at this point. But once I feel like I've completely locked down my market, absolutely, we're going to be moving into neighboring states and other states. Absolutely.
How about some of those smaller communities that are just north of the metropolitan area?
How much farther north? Because we go again. Here we go. But
like Gaylord,
I go all the way up. No, we don't go that far yet. The reason I don't go that far, and maybe this is something I need to work on. we have gotten properties under contract that were sort of in those rural outlying areas, and we just can't find the buyers. My buyers that I have on my list just don't want to go that far. So my marketing for buy, and that's what I'm starting to do too. We're making a real effort to increase our buyers list for people in those rural areas, and then also people outside of Michigan, because Michigan people are extremely spoiled when it comes to investing. You know, the 2% rule, I'm sure you've heard of that. Like, they have to do better than the 2% rule, where people in other areas of the country or the world, like, can't find properties that meet the 2% rule. Mm-hmm. They're finding it all over the place in Michigan, and people are really, really picky. So I'm looking for investors outside of Michigan that maybe don't care if it's Ferndale or, you know, all the neighboring, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, Hazel Park or whatever. Like, they just don't really care. It's a return on investment for them. So that's sort of we need to get more people who are just really caring about return on investment more than anything.
I think that's great. So return on investment from a flip, or do you have any rentals?
Yeah, I do have personally. I've got six, and I am aggressively growing that now because I'm getting older, and I realize that I can't be the source of my income solely for the rest of my life. I'd like there to be some passive income there too. So I have started buying properties, kind of cherry picking the ones that I like out of my direct marketing and keeping those for myself.
That's exactly what we do. We take the best properties, the ones that have the best access from a land standpoint, and then we sell them on terms. So we'll buy a property for $1,000 to $3,000 cash that's got some great access because somebody just needs to get out of it or wants to get out of it. And then we'll sell it for $18,000 to $20,000 on terms at about 5 to 9% and collect $100 to $200 a month for a lot of years.
Nice.
So it's nice. That's exactly what we do. But, well, it's not exactly, but, you know.
Yeah, and the other thing too is just building a smart business. Right now, another reason why we haven't gone out of state is my partner and I are trying to really, really dial in our business so that we don't have to be in it 24/7. You know, we're hiring people and we're doing some things to systematize our business to the point that we're not like a slave to it. So once we dial that in exactly where we want it to be, we'll just replicate that in other markets.
I think that's a fantastic goal. We don't, I have not looked at a piece of property that we've purchased in probably, I don't know, 5 to 8 years. In fact, I don't remember the last one. It's just land, you know. So,
yeah, exactly.
If we're purchasing 40 acres for $3,000, what could really go that wrong? That's kind of my philosophy.
I totally agree. I totally agree. Yeah, I bought a burned out house one time. It was a house fire, it was just destroyed, and we bought it for like $8,000, like this house. And that was sort of my thing. Like, how bad could this go? Like, if you just tore it down and rebuilt it, you know? So yeah, we just took a flyer on it. I had no idea if anybody would want it, but it was an okay area. It wasn't a great area, but yeah, that was one of the better deals too. I think we made like $20,000 on that, like in no time. And the guy who bought it was like, he thought he was stealing it from us. So it worked out really well.
My philosophy too is the guy that I sell it to, he needs to make more than me because then he's coming back.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Those are the best because honestly, at the end of the day, you can sell something to someone and if they feel like they didn't get a great deal or they kind of got screwed over, for lack of a better term, you just lost a buyer. Like, they're not going to come back. What's the long-term goal there? Like, how many people are you going to do that to before you don't have a business anymore? So we always try to make sure that our buyer's ecstatic, our seller's ecstatic, that we're happy, and that's the only way to go.
That's great. Seriously, man, it sounds like you have this figured out.
I hope so. I mean, we're learning all the time. I'm constantly buying, you know, courses and I just want to learn. Like, I'm not, when you're new and you buy a course, you're trying to like learn the whole business from a course. I buy courses because if just one thing in there hits me and makes sense and I can apply it, it was all worth it. So I'm constantly trying to educate myself. I'll buy education. If it sounds like there's something in it that I could use, I'll buy it without even thinking about it. I'll devour it and just take that one nugget. And if that one nugget pays for the, you know, $500 course or whatever, then great. I'll do that all day long. I'm all about, and the same thing I do with my marketing. If I can spend $10,000 in marketing but make $80,000 or $100,000 as a result, it's just a no-brainer. It's just handing someone $1,000 and them handing you back $10,000. Why would you not do that?
Right. I bought a course about a year and a half ago about how to buy notes. you know, how to buy mortgages instead of buying the actual house, you know.
Yep.
And man, I missed work for a week. I was so engrossed in it. It's, I mean, and I didn't follow through on it because this other stuff is so successful, but I'll tell you, what a way to buy real estate.
That's a great point too, is I stopped buying courses that had nothing really to do with what I do in real estate, you know, a whole different avenue. I buy courses from people who do exactly what I do. And I want to see what they're doing. I want to see what's making them successful. And honestly, having a podcast like you have, I have met some just incredibly, incredibly successful real estate investors. And you sort of get a little bit of a backstage pass, right? You get their number and email, and you know, you don't abuse it, but you know, every once in a while, reach out and say, "Hey, I just had a question for you." And people are more than willing to help. And I've learned more from people that I've interviewed than any course I've ever taken. And it's been huge in my business, just picking up little nuggets in interviews and just talking to them after the interview and just kind of chit-chatting about business a little bit. I've learned so much. It's made me so much money. It's ridiculous.
You know, I think it's really, really, really helpful for people to listen to shows like this. This is why I have a show, because it's exactly what we talked about earlier. It's helpful for them to hear real people who have real success talking about it and not really hawking anything like you hear on TV at, you know, at 2 a.m.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Just sharing good information. That's exactly why I started my podcast. And, you know, a lot of people have told me, you know, you've done 320 some episodes. You don't really sell anything. Like, and at some point, you know, at some point something has to like have returns, but I really did it because I wanted to help people. And honestly, I get a lot of the same questions all the time. So why not just have a podcast where I answer these questions and it's out there forever and you can listen to the episodes. And I just really do like helping people get in the business, because I was scared to death when I started and I felt really stupid asking basic questions because I felt like I was kind of a bother. And I don't know, I just had a thing, like I just didn't want to bother people. Mm-hmm. So I tended to not ask questions and I made mistakes that I could have avoided by just getting that information. So I just like helping new people.
What's the one resource you couldn't succeed without?
Oh, let's see. I'm going to say two because they really do go hand in hand in my business. I could not live without Google Drive. We keep everything in Google Drive. My partner and I share all documents, it's super critical for us. Our whole business is run off of Google Drive. The other one is CRM. It really doesn't matter which one you use. Mine isn't really important, but having a software that manages all of your leads and all the notes and everything, that's huge for us because, you know, they say the money's in the database, the money is in the follow-up. Well, you can't follow up if you don't have a database. So that database and our follow-up is critical. Matter of fact, just today, got a call from someone, same kind of a deal. It was in Royal Oak, actually, a house in Royal Oak. We just couldn't come together on a price. And my partner has called once a month, every month. And they finally called today and said, "We're ready to do this. And we're going to make $10,000 off of marketing that seemed like it was dead. And if we didn't have a database and didn't follow up, that would have been money we would have lost."
That's great. On a daily basis, we experience what you just experienced. Somebody calls and we say, "This is our price." And then they say, "No way." And 6 months later, they've called a realtor. They tried everything else and they say, "We're ready to do it."
Absolutely.
And until you experience that over and over and over again, it's hard to believe.
I know, it really is. But if you don't have that database and you're not following up, it's tough. You don't get those calls sometimes.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. I got a few rapid fire questions here. If you're up for it.
Yep. Fire away. I'm ready.
What did you want to do for a living when you were a kid?
Oh man, I really didn't know. At one point I wanted to be a writer. Write novels. Isn't that weird? Far from it, but yeah.
So you didn't want to work for General Motors?
No, I watched what my dad did and that did not seem like a lot of fun. But I did a lot of reading when I was a kid and I just thought it'd be really cool lifestyle to have, to be a writer. Just seemed, you know, it sort of gives you the same thing that real estate is giving me. It's that freedom, you know, it's not a non-traditional job. I think from a very early age, I wanted a non-traditional job.
That's great. What's the best advice you've ever received and by whom?
Best advice, you mean in real estate?
Sure, or anything.
Okay. Best advice I ever received was from my mentor, and it was early on in real estate. I was kind of had that shiny object syndrome. Everything caught my eye, all different kinds of real estate investing caught my eye, and I was very unfocused and very unsuccessful. And he said, "Listen, you need to put blinders on like a Clydesdale and Figure out what you want to do. If it's house flipping, great. House flipping. Don't even look or think about anything else. You do house flipping until you are successful, and then diversify if you want, but not until you've reached success there. And that was huge for me. I had to stop looking at all the shiny objects that were going by.
That's great. I mean, like, pick one thing and be the best at it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The biggest mistake new people make is trying to do a little bit of everything because they never do anything very well, and it becomes frustrating. So you have to just laser focus.
One of the mistakes that I see new people make is trying to like squeeze blood out of a turnip. Like if the deal doesn't work, then just move on to the next deal.
Yeah,
they put a system in place to get it. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like, look, you're not going to make any money on this thing. Get moved to the next deal. And if you have to do that 50 times till you find one. This is what I say. The first deal that you do, you should be running to the bank saying, oh my God, I hope this seller doesn't change their mind.
Exactly.
It needs to be that good of a deal, you know, because if the first couple of deals that you do, you were fortunate where you made some money. You know, if you do a couple of deals, everybody loses some money at some point on it in real estate. But if it's the first two deals that you're losing money on, you're going to say, I want to go do something else.
Exactly. It's a big deterrent when you're losing money right off the bat. But I totally agree with you. Yeah, totally agree.
What was the worst subject you had in school?
Math.
Wow, that's amazing.
Didn't take me long to answer that one, did it?
No.
Now, here's the ironic thing. With financial numbers, I'm pretty good because I've been doing it for so long now in real estate. I'm real good, but it's simple math, obviously. But math was definitely the hardest for me. And my wife's a science teacher, and I routinely kid her and tell her that that was the class that I cheated in the most with science because I didn't really get that either.
That's the number one, and we interview a lot of people, and they always say math. Even really successful people like you, it amazes me.
Isn't that amazing? I know. I was always really jealous and in awe of people who are good at math. My best friend was like a math savant. He was great, and I don't understand how people can do that, but whatever.
I think you either have it or you don't. With math.
I think so too, and I do not have it.
What famous person would you like to meet, dead or alive?
Boy, there's a lot of them, but one that's on my mind, in the front of my mind, because I've sort of been obsessing a little bit, is Steve Jobs. Just think he was completely fascinating. His approach to business doesn't sound like a very nice guy, but his approach to business I find fascinating.
Yeah, that's great. How about your favorite book?
My favorite book, boy, I like a lot of Dan Kennedy stuff. I think he's awesome. I just read the Steve Jobs book. Love that. Like that's why I think it's just fresh in my mind because I just read the book. But I really enjoyed that one. And what I get out of that one, obviously he wasn't a real estate guy, but he was all about laser focus and simplicity, right? Like going back to Apple and stripping down their product line. So they only had a couple of products, but then just do those really, really well. That's kind of how I run my business. I can't be everything in real estate, but I can be the best at one or two things. And that's really what I try to do.
Yeah, deconstruction is so important when stuff starts to go sideways.
Yep. Clutter in a business is so bad.
Right. Okay, last question. When will you know that you're done? I mean, do you have a goal or an exit strategy?
Okay, so my wife's probably going to listen to this. So the official goal is she can retire in 5 years. And when she retires, I want us to be in a position where I don't have to work anymore. Now, the trick of that is we have a son that will be in college at that time. So that'll be tricky. But that's sort of the unofficial official goal is 5 years from now to be in a position where at least I can retire if we decide that's what the best thing to do. In my mind, I know I'm probably going to go for a while longer because I want to build my business so it kind of feels like I am retired, even when I'm not technically retired.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So, I guess my goal is to never retire, but have it feel like I retired in about 5 years. That's exactly what I'm doing. That's why I'm aggressively building my portfolio of houses is because I want, even if, you know, I get hit by a bus, hopefully I don't, there's still money coming in no matter what. All right. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of my goal.
Right. All good goals, man. It's been a pleasure having you, Mike.
It's been fun, guys. I really appreciate you inviting me on. I really do. It's been very fun, and I enjoyed it.
A lot of times we have guests on the show, and we talk about nebulous topics. This was you're clearly – there's nothing nebulous about you, pal.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I love what I do. This business is great. I mean, I just can't stress enough – man, if this business is not for everybody, I just don't understand the people that it's not for, why it would not be for them. It's just such a great business. So I love it. I love talking about it. I mean, I have a podcast where I blab on and on about it forever. I love meeting new people and being on their podcast. So this has been very cool. Hopefully it helps some people.
Oh, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Great having you, man. Hope to have you back soon, actually.
Thank you. Anytime, just give me a call. I'd be happy to do it.
All right. Awesome.
Thanks, Mike. Talk about great energy.
Jeez.
He made me, I'm like lifting up my game a little bit. I'm sitting up a little taller in my chair,
listening. Makes you want to go back to wholesaling houses, doesn't it?
I don't know.
No.
You know.
That's such the right answer, Julie.
You know, it makes me appreciate what we do, and because we have our own niche in the same big, industry, if you will. Mm-hmm. But no, I'm so happy to leave that to Mike, and boy, it's all good. Everybody wins.
Yeah, I think that he's got a perfect business model. It's very similar to ours, but I think what theoretically is missing is his lack of acute involvement with the actual piece of real estate. You know, we buy properties all over the country all the time, and we look at them on Google Earth, and that's it.
Right.
So the scalability of his model, well, it's an awesome model, and I'm sure, he's clearly doing really, really well with it. Mm-hmm. The scalability of it, it might hold him back. I don't know.
Well, that's, I think, one of the reasons why we do what we do is we love it, is for us to step out. There's more involved, clearly. He's clearly an expert at what he does. He's got it down. And what it tells me is for him to think twice about, going to another state, maybe another county, there's a lot involved. With our business, we're the experts at what we do. And how do I say that? Do you know where I'm going with that? It's not hard for us to do this nationwide.
Right.
Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah.
Did I lose you?
Well, not at all. It's scalable. No, you didn't lose me at all, Jella.
Okay.
This is more for our audience than us, mm-hmm. have wholesaled our share of houses, and it. Mm-hmm. I can honestly say it's just not for us. It's very profitable, but I think that it's easier to say let's move on to Nevada, let's move on to Southern California, like we do in the land business, and just watch the deals come in. So I'm happy for him, he's a great guest to have.
Totally.
A ton of energy and
great
super
stuff.
Positive.
Easy to talk to. The Michigan thing didn't slow us down. Just kidding. Oh, that was so good. A couple of his, you guys pronounce a few words differently, and I love it. It just is really funny. It just makes me think of my family, and it cracks me up. So it's good. So cool.
Good.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I think that everyone would get a lot out of that. I was just sitting there. You two, I didn't say a whole lot on this one, as you could tell. I was just kind of sitting there just laughing and listening at you two, and yes. Just let you go. And that was perfect. That was a whole lot of fun. So good stuff. What's so funny?
Nothing. I agree with you. It's, I'm a little worn out. He's a high energy guy in a good way.
Oh, great way. Totally.
Let's go buy some real estate.
All right.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com.
If you want to get involved or you need more information about our profitable, niche real estate operation, call 480-467-0359. You just might get Jill at the other end of the line.
Landacademy.com. You are not alone in your real estate ambition.